Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Secure Your Life. I am your host, Diamond Taylor. This is Business in the Making. This segment is all about entrepreneurship, business, and it is a serious but fun business interactive show for those in business or looking to start one, or if you're looking for a job or anything like that in between. You definitely do not want to miss this show. If you want to get ahead in your business endeavors and have fun in the process, then you have definitely tuned in to the right show. So before we do anything, I want to tell you all a little bit about what we're going to be discussing this evening. We're going to be talking about social economics, community-based business development, community retail banking partners, and the political responsibility to the community and community-based businesses. So I want to hear from you if you are a consumer, if you know, or if you're in business or want to start a business, have been having problems deciding where to put your business, or you're just having problems with the businesses that are in your community or lack thereof. I want to hear from you. The phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. But before we do anything, we must give our disclaimer and give a little housework. So I will be right back with you right after our disclaimer, so hold on real tight, and we'll start the show in just a second.
It is time to do a little housekeeping and give you our disclaimer for Secure Your Life. The views and opinions expressed on the show may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the host, the sponsors, this station, and that of Paracon Productions. the content and or information that is referenced and referred to on this program are intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. We encourage our listeners to seek direct consultation from a qualified, licensed, and certified professional. The purpose of this show is to provide an open forum where one is free to express his or her opinion. In a no-holds-barred discussion about money, personal finances, and business matters. Now, it is time for you to sit back and participate and enjoy the show. And once again, thank you for joining us for Secure Your Life.
Okay, we are back, and if you just joined us, this is Business in the Making, and just like with any business meeting, we must start off our business the right way. So I'm going to give you a little comedy break before we start in with our subject topics for this evening. We're talking about social economics, but I'd like to give you a little comedy break since this is definitely hump day and it's in the middle of our week. So let's tune in to the Business in the Making comedy break. And just like every meeting, I'm pretty sure everyone has experienced meetings just like this.
Okay, people, let's get this meeting started. Our first order of business is to find out who brought the Krispy Kreme donuts.
I have them. They're right here.
Ah, excellent. And the coffee?
It's right here.
Good. Okay. Now, let's talk about this expense report. Can somebody tell me how the hell we spent $8 million last year on coffee and donuts? Well, as you know, our platform for real-time solutions is facing retribution from a government probe. I propose that we leverage the front-end architecture from those infrastructures and engineer a new solution next year that will enable us to implement the integrated network our engineering team has innovated. However, due to Asian market value deflation, we will undergo a massive reorganization. All the engineers will be summarily dismissed, and we'll hire two more managers to oversee this. I understand we'll be short-handed, but don't pay it any mind. We can expedite the partnership to fix the bottom line. This will drive all the B2B initiatives to redefine the value-added metrics of our mission. It'll generate a killer paradigm so we can guide the delivery of all the cross-platform action items. Collaborative efforts for the e-market experience reinvent the frictionless and synergistic variants, allowing us to maximize strategies that may arise and minimize the risk to our e-solution enterprise. Any questions?
Just one.
What the hell did he say? I think he's making up words. What the hell did he say?
Using nouns as verbs.
You can leverage anything if it's phrased the right way. But I still want to know, what the hell did he say?
Now, we need to have a meeting so we can prepare for our next meeting. Should we schedule a meeting to set that up?
I don't think we have enough donuts for that.
The organization will be more organized if we can embiggen our members with a Cromulent plan, which management can expedite and leverage to us both. Then we'll orchestrate the schema, which will maximize our growth. We need to synthesize some vertical technologies to harness the holistic web services of all of these and utilize the visionary system to produce some eye-catching web services for inner office use. The ubiquitous nature of the back-end interfaces needs a proactive portal that we can put through its paces. From that, we'll evolve a cutting-edge e-business, which will harness the best of breed seeds of our existence. Our methodologies to implement this plan require scalable, synergistic ways to meet demand. But I believe with the power of the open source proprietary services that we can make a mark that will be legendary. Our mind share will reach a targeted amount once the virtual deployment has finished rolling out. We'll get a huge ROI and some more jelly donuts, and then I'll give myself a huge bonus.
What the hell did he say?
I think he's making up words.
What the hell did he say?
Using nouns as verbs.
You can leverage anything if it's phrased the right way, but I still want to know, what the hell did he say?
Okay, now, I have a PowerPoint presentation here which better illustrates what I just spoke about. See here, we have a circle, two squares, and a bunch of arrows. If we connect the circle to the first square, you'll see that we can bypass the triangles, and that will save the company millions.
Okay, we are back, and I'm with him. What the hell did he say? That makes absolutely no sense. And in this chaotic situation, we're talking about socioeconomics and what's going on in our business community. And the question tonight that I've gotten from Facebook as well as Twitter and our email, if you would like to contact us, and if you just joined us, you are listening to Secure Your Life. This is Business in the Making. Tonight we're talking about social economics, and our topics this evening are social economic community, business development, community retail banking partners, the political responsibility to our community, as well as to community-based businesses. So I want to hear from you about some of these issues that we're having and what should we be doing as a community to support our local businesses. And if you're unhappy about the local community businesses that are in your neighborhood, I want to talk to you about that and how we can change that. And the phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. I'm going to open up the phone lines as well as the chat room and also read out some of our interesting email to you. So 815, good evening. How are you?
Oh, good evening, Diamond. And how are you?
I am doing great. And happy hump day.
Oh, thank you. Hey, we're trying.
Okay, and well, here's my question to you, Ron. In your community or the communities that you have lived in or what's going on with you, are you happy about your local businesses? And how can they be improved?
Well, I would say, the economy is not good, but I would say It's not that bad if you got the bucks. If you need some work done on your house, there are a lot of companies out here that say like that are available and they will deal with you because you're not getting a lot of business now.
That is definitely true. That is definitely true.
Right. See,
well,
so
here's my question. And actually, we got an email about this subject, and they were saying that the biggest problem that they're having with the community businesses and business developments that's happening is that it is so disenfranchised, where in some communities, depending on your city and how it's structured, you can't or you feel uncomfortable supporting those businesses because they're not supporting the community correctly. They're not servicing the community correctly to the point where they feel that even though it's disenfranchised, for instance, the person said that I live in a community that's predominantly black, and there are no black businesses in my community. The stores that are here are the merchants are of different ethnic groups other than what is shown in the community, and that needs to change. And what happened to our local businesses that used to happen in our area? Their question is, how do we bring black businesses to the black community?
Ah, that is, I have to give that some thought.
I want to point it out to the rest of our audience. Are you being represented in your community? Are the merchants in your community, do they service you correctly? And if not, why are you patronizing them if they are not servicing you correctly? And how do we get black businesses back in the black neighborhoods? So if you'd like to answer those questions, the phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. 1-800-843-4343, or you can join us in the chat room. We love to hear from you there. I'm also can be reached by Twitter. So that's Twitter at Secure Your Life or Facebook at Secure Your Life. We would be happy to take your comments and or questions there as well. So to keep the conversation going, Ron, you was about to say that that's something that really think about. So do you? Let me ask you this while you're contemplating that. Do you remember when the businesses that were in the community actually did support the community effectively? And do you remember when black businesses were in the black neighborhoods?
Yes. Well, what was happening is that, okay, as a result of segregation, the black community, okay, the black shopkeepers, hey, they had the black community to themselves. And there was a thing of saying, like, they treated the black community right because, hey, these are the same people. They were aware of the economic situation of the neighborhood. So they were not overcharging, and they treated everybody fairly, pretty fairly. And they didn't mistreat people. Whereas when you have people coming in from other nationalities, other cultures, and other ideas as to what it is that the expression might be, you end up with a totally different situation. You'll end up with people coming into the neighborhood, doing business, and they set up their shops in the black community, but they don't live there, not only do they overcharge, they do not stock their shops properly, they do not keep their shops clean, and they have a bad habit of bothering black women. And black women are going along with this.
That is a problem.
They come in, and these shopkeepers are being totally disrespectful to them, and they're just laughing it off. And the reason they're laughing it off is because, and they're going into these shops because for a quick feel, hey, they can get a little write off, or he'll give them a little credit. Whereas if they go to Dominic's or Jewel, it's not going to happen there. Dominic's and Jewel does not give credit.
Right. Well, and here's the thing that, you know, we have to think about the responsibility. Who is to blame for the failure of black businesses? Who is to blame for that?
Okay. Well,
is it the economic situation? Is it? I mean, what are the results? Who is to blame for it?
Well, hey, the black shopkeepers and the community itself. The black
shopkeepers.
Yeah.
I said, okay. Would you like to reiterate?
Okay. Here's what's happening. Like I said, it's the black shopkeepers and the community itself that bring some bad news into the neighborhood. What happens is that, first of all, the black customers feel that, well, oh, we're all black, so you should give me a break. No, what break? You should give me a gift.
Well, that's not going to work.
You should let me have it because I'm black like you. And the thing being is the black shopkeepers quite often, hey, they're sitting up trying to play a rip-off game.
How so?
Okay, they overcharge, they price gouge, and the thing being, well, they do the same thing that the foreigners are coming in. You can have a foreigner will come in, and he will set up his shop, say, within 2 or 3 blocks of a major supermarket. And he'll be doing business hand over fist. People will go to him instead of walking the two blocks down to a Jewel or to a Dominic's.
Okay, so you're saying that the lack of, or should the mistreatment of the customer is mainly due to the community's fault as a whole for accepting this type of behavior from the shopkeepers or merchants that are in the community.
Yeah, be they black or white, be the shopkeepers black or white, the neighborhood is letting it slide. And the thing being, a black man will be in a shop. You'll be a customer in the shop. He's waiting to get waited on, and a black woman will be in there getting waited on, I should say. And the shopkeeper is making this a lot of derogatory remarks to this female, ungentlemanly remarks. Hey, baby, it's looking good. All that, look at that butt. Yeah,
well, that's inappropriate.
You're looking good.
Yeah, and that's completely inappropriate.
Right, it's inappropriate activity on the shopkeeper's part, and this is a foreigner now. And but see that he never brings. Hey, the only time his wife or his daughter comes around the shop is when he gets ready to close the shop up. His wife or his daughter might come up in the car, and they jump in the car and take off.
Well, here's the thing. Now, if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. This is Business in the Making, and tonight's topic is about social economics. We're talking about community-based business. We're talking about who's to blame for the failure of black businesses. We're also going to be discussing the political responsibility to our community as well as the businesses in our community. So I want to hear from you. I have another person who just, her name is Kimberly, and she just sent us a text message, basically. And she wants to know, she is a business owner. She has a brand new business, and she's looking for a place to put her business. She is having an issue with the community in which she wants to support her community. But blighting business problems has been an issue with the dilapidated conditions in which she finds her community in, that she does not want to put her business there because the cost of doing business in her neighborhood will be very high. And how do we resolve that?
Okay. Now, that's something I was about to bring up. The insurance rates are killers in bad neighborhoods.
Right.
Or either in tumble-down neighborhoods. The insurance rates are murder. See, so, And like you were saying, and I was just saying, I'd have to really do some heavy thinking. And how would you go about getting black shopkeepers or someone that was familiar with the grocery business enough to say start a small ma and pa grocery store like these foreigners are setting up in our neighborhoods?
Right.
And what really gets me is that these foreigners are setting up these neighborhoods and setting up their shops in the black neighborhoods, and you never see them in white neighborhoods or Hispanic neighborhoods.
Well, and then that was the other thing. It's like, you know, the cost of doing business, of course, in those communities. And you really need to look at that. We need to discuss the fact that we do need to bring more businesses that will actually service the community properly. And we also need to deal with the plight of the business owners or would-be business owners to the community. What is the community's responsibility for its conditions, and how can we encourage business owners to want to place their businesses in those communities? And also getting the banks involved, because the banks have responsibilities also in being able to, because we bailed out them, we want these businesses in our communities, and the banks do have a responsibility in which to lend the business owner a, you know, or even find grants, if you will, from the city, the political responsibility to our communities to make sure that we are being serviced correctly. And like you said, how is it that foreigners can come in, they can get the grants and the loans, they can put their grocery stores in our community, we will patronize them and have been patronizing them. Why is it that we're having problems patronizing our own? Or one, and that's one question. And how is it that the would-be business owner would find a way to put these businesses back into the community and get the same support that we are giving foreigners? So if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. This is Business in the Making. Our phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. I want to hear from you. I want to know how do you think we can fix our community problems and encourage businesses to have community-based business where we would, as the community, would patronize those businesses, help them to flourish, and so that we can get some good community growth. So I'm going to open up the phone lines again, and the phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. I'm going to go to area code 773-787. And good evening. How are you today?
I'm good, Diamond. How are you?
I am doing great. Did you hear our question, or do I need to repeat it?
No, I did hear your question. And I was just contemplating on the question. And it's there's a twofold answer to the questions in which you've posed. In my opinion, one of the things that I think that we really fail to accept, especially being African Americans in our own black communities, is that we only acknowledge situations that take place in our community when it consists of other races that are doing things that we're not doing in our community. But we really have to first and foremost look at and take responsibility for the fact that we've had the opportunities, and at one point in time, we did operate businesses in our own communities. But why were those businesses transformed over to now foreigners? Why were those businesses shut down and closed because the business owners weren't able to maintain them? It's because we, as black people in our own communities, were no longer supporting the businesses in our communities. Or if the businesses were there, then we later, losing control of our youth and the transitions of economic stances, hardship economic stances that ended up hitting our community, allowed us to then go in and violate those black-owned businesses. So that's the first thing that we have to look at. Secondly, we know that in this country that we only get one opportunity to shine or to be broken as African Americans in this country. So when your business fails in your community and basically it's looked at that your community did not support your business, how quick and fast or how much of a risk is a bank going to take in giving you or any other African Americans the opportunity to go in and try to build up a business that has already, in their eyesight, been shown is not going to be supported by their own? We as African Americans spend more money in certain industries, especially the beauty industry. We dominate that industry when it comes to retail and sales and purchasing. We don't dominate when it comes to the ownership of that industry. Asians dominate that industry when it comes to ownership and benefit and profiting from it. These people who come in that we look at as the minorities or the others outside of African Americans, we look at them as being, you know, the predators. They come in and they prey on us. Well, they can't prey on us if we didn't support them and allow them to stay in the communities, but they've studied our heritage. They've studied our purchasing procedures. They know that anything that consists of beauty supplies, being wigs, cosmetics, and relaxers and all that other stuff, liquor stores, you know, we have cars, so we're going to buy gas, and we always need to get stuff that we can, don't feel like going to the major grocery stores to get because they cost too much and we complain about it, and they know that. So they throw those extra things into the gas station that they know that we'll buy. It may not be top quality. It could be expired, but as long as the pricing is in our range and the date hasn't passed, it may be that day of, we can eat it or use it on that day, then we'll go for it. They've gone as far as even allow us, and actually some of them, and taking risk of their own of using the link card to purchase stuff. And sometimes the things that you purchase on your link card, you don't even qualify on the link card because it's not a food product. But they'll still do it because, you know what, they get our money and they know how we think. Liquor stores, gas stations with the store supplies, the beauty shops, the currency exchanges with a liquor store close by or a chicken joint. All of these places now you see, yes, foreigners who've come here, and they're dominating us because they know that we will take our last to support living paycheck to paycheck or link to link or whatever to do what we need to do by whatever means necessary to make it through the day. So the first thing that we have to acknowledge is, how do we go about supporting our own businesses? Why we don't support our own businesses? And look at the psychological thinking of how we function in our own communities. Because everybody else is looking at it, and everyone else is benefiting from it. And we're the only ones sitting back, just like 30, 40 years, 50, 60 years ago, where we wanted to complain and say, the white man is keeping us down. Well, they're not white anymore. They're more our color now. They're just from another country and another nationality. So that's really the thing that we need to address here. We can't jump the fence and ask, well, how can we build up the community and bring black businesses back into the black community until we take responsibility and acknowledge why are we in this situation first and foremost from our own perspective and deal with us first before we can step outside the box and try to fix the situation.
I 100% agree with everything that you just said. Let me give the phone number again. If you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. I am your host, Diamond Taylor, and we're talking about business in the making. This is social economics and the plight of the reason why or who's to blame for the failure of black businesses, community business development, we're talking about that, community retail banking partners, and the political responsibility to the community and to community businesses. And what are the responsibilities that we as a community, and why are we patronizing businesses that do not reflect our needs, for one? And what is the political responsibility for the community as well as the community businesses? And what are the bank's responsibility? Since we have bailed out them, do they have a responsibility to the communities in which they actually reside in beyond just giving us the basic products and services that they normally give, which is our checking, our savings, or, you know, the basic things that the community needs for that bank? Are there any other responsibilities that the bank should be doing for the community as a whole? So if you just joined us, I'd like to hear from you. The phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. You can also go to the chat room. I'm willing to take your question and or comments, read them over the air. You can also catch us on Twitter. Just send us a tweet at Twitter @SecureYourLife or Facebook @SecureYourLife. Secure Your Life, and I will read your comment and or question over the air. We're going to keep the conversation rolling, and I'd like to focus a little bit on something that you had just said at the end of the at your end of your comment, which was us taking responsibility as a community for the businesses that we do patronize. And the problems that I have with the businesses that we patronize and do not reflect the community as it, as itself is one that when you're there, you're not treated properly. But yet still we keep coming back and we keep coming back for the convenience of being inconvenienced, if you know what I'm saying. It's convenient that the store is there, yes, but are they treating you well? You're still having to pay those dollars. African-American are the biggest consumers, but we own less than anybody. That has to change. And how do we change that thinking so that we can encourage people who want to start a business or people who already have a business that's looking to expand to bring those businesses into the, our communities so that we can, and that look like the community, so that we can patronize them? So that's my question. Again, I'm going to give the phone number, area code 347-884-9343. Again, that's area code 347-884-9343. And I want you, if you don't mind, to answer that question. But before you do, I'm also going to let in area code 773-988. You are on the air. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for calling. Did you hear the question?
Yes, I heard a bit of it. It was about the bank's responsibility to the community, and I think you said something about the treatment that we receive from local business. I'd like to address the treatment that we receive from local business, if I could. My opinion is one of the problems is that African Americans, people who were brought to this country in chains, if you will, we are used to receiving bad treatment. So it's only par for the course for us to continue to receive bad treatment and still smile and take it, or smile and continue. That's what I think a lot of people from around the world have recognized, because we get a lot of different groups of people that come into the African community, African American community, and get wealthy basically off of us and then move on to a higher paying clientele. The only thing I can say is that, you know, the reason that we get so much ill treatment is, I guess, in a way we expect it, number one. And number two, I think we haven't learned to respect ourselves enough. There was a time when there were just black businesses in the black communities because we were forced, especially in the Chicago area, to do business among each other. But because we didn't have enough self-respect, we did not continue to support our businesses. As soon as integration came in, we were able to go to downtown and to the malls and that kind of thing. We stopped servicing our own communities. We thought it was beneath us. So it's just a matter of self-respect, I think.
Okay. Area code 773-787. Do you have a continued comment, or would you like to address any of the other issues that we talked about?
Well, I totally agree with the gentleman's statement that he just made, and it is a conditioning of the African American's mind of, you know, you get used to the harsh treatment, so you adapt regardless as to where it's coming from. And we as a people, first of all, are a very forgiving nationality of people. So when people do things to us, we have a tendency to just move forward and forgive, because we've gotten used to just overlooking things and letting it go. But let it be no mistake, we are not the only set of a society of people who has gone through harsh punishment and mistreatments and dealing with themselves as a whole, as a nationality of individuals. The Jews have gone through it, Hispanics have gone through it, and those are two groups of individuals who have gone through suppressed periods in their lives. But you know what the difference is between their nationality and ours is that they have learned to work together, to support each other, regardless as to what they've gone through as a people, and yet they rise. They rise because they have something that we have a tendency to lose, and it's falling apart every day, but they have unity of family. And that's the core of everything. It's family. If we can't support each other in family situations in order to grow and to develop and to build something, these individuals will sleep, and Asians as well, will sleep with 12 people in a two-bedroom apartment where they're able to collaborate all of their assets and their funds in order for a greater cause, a small nail shop where they all learn the skill to do what we flock to as women, and now even men, every day of the week, 7 days a week, and they know what our needs are. They benefit from that. Hispanics who are willing to do the jobs that we turned our noses down to and said that it was beneath us, that our foreparents did it, it was part of slavery. But now Hispanics are making millions of dollars and have homes and corporations they've built in it. Those things are working in hotels. Well, now they own hotels and cleaning as maids and servants and butlers, of doing gardening, going out and doing agriculture, those things which we said was beneath us because we had to pick cotton and do all of that, so cutting grass and landscaping and so have you is beneath us. We won't do it. Yet that's become a multi-million dollar, billion dollar industry for the Latina community, and now they're manifesting monies and doing everything they want to do, from having their own television, radio stations, their own, their restaurants, their community, and they support each other very much so. We are the only nationality that has a tendency to find fault and excuses and reasons, and we will even reach all the way back to slavery when our foreparents and grandparents and so have you came over on the boat. There is no disrespect and there is no lightness or any type of nonchalant attitude as to the fact that that did happen. My ancestors came over. Several, you know, and that include Native Americans who were here and mistreated as well, as far as my heritage. But I cannot use that excuse today for me, nor my children, nor their children to come, as to why we failed to succeed in life today, because we have the opportunities.
Well, I don't want to disagree with anything that you're saying, but I would like to add a point to that. And the fact of the matter is institutionalized slavery was not just a physical bondage. It was also a system of continuous, and it actually is still going on today, continuous discrimination from everything from housing to education. No other group of, I think, of people on the planet has had such a powerful government and force to keep them mentally, psychologically, physically terrorized the way blacks in America have had it. Now, excuses, people like to bring that argument up a lot, but to me, everything is, if you plant an acorn seed, you get an acorn tree. It doesn't change, and it's been proven that. A government like the United States, as powerful as it is able to topple entire countries. So, to say that we're not affected by the policies of the United States government, United States business, United States attitudes, the mainstream's desire to keep us in at a certain level at all costs, even though there may be other threats, we always seem to rise to the top as being the number one threat, and it's always been an active effort. And, in fact, I remember during certain times when they saw that too many people were getting to be too happy, they'd just murder a bunch of them and make people sad again. And this whole policy of terrorism that our community has faced from slavery, and which it continues today, is nothing to be ignored, because it's part of the reason why we have excuses. And then everybody hollers, no, that's just excusable. And you've got the United States government with all its resources behind your being held down. You're going to stay down pretty much until you figure out what you need to figure out to work as a group. But I would never, ever, I would say that black people have been so resilient, considering the amount of adversarial conditioning. And, in fact, let's even be honest, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the entire Constitution of the United States was based on the underpinnings of slavery and what to do with the commodity of slaves, because it's a commodity, just like gold, corn, anything else, and it had to be controlled. So we've been under a system of controls since we got here, and it goes on to this very day. It's just that now it's been expanded to every other group of people, and some of the controls that they're receiving are not quite as harsh as what we continue to receive. You look on television, you look on the newspapers, I mean, we always seem to be worthless. We always seem to be targeted, number one. If there's a violent crime in the black community, you think we're the only people that have crimes against each other. I talk to people from other countries who say, oh, you guys just don't know. We kill each other off by the thousands. So, you know, a lot of it is psychological, what's going on. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. No, I was just going to say, you know, to a certain extent, you're absolutely correct. But let me say this, and this is what I think we as a people have forgotten. Let's take a look at an issue that's taking place right now in our country. Our own president has been placed and put on the spot based on his qualifications to be president, and if he has the legal rights to be a president, if he's legitimately born as a United States citizen. Okay, let's look at the root of how that came about. It wasn't about really trying to see the legitimizing him as a president. It's what has taken place since day one, when the first slave was brought over from Africa, sold by our own people to the white man. The issue is the white man's greatest fear and his insecurity is a free, educated black man. That's what we forget as a whole and as a nationality. That is what they use to try and suppress us, to keep us down and out. Now, they've used that same now issue, Donald Trump, is showing his insecurity and his fears of trying to run a legitimate campaign if he chooses to run for president of this country by trying to demean Barack Obama. If he can discredit his ability of being a legitimate U.S. citizen born in Hawaii, that's what he's trying to do, to the fact that they're even nitpicking as far as to try and say if back in the time, the date that he was born, if they would actually have called him an African instead of a Negro. And now that they've looked at the fact that that's pretty legitimate, and they've had proof from Hawaii's officials that the birth certificate is official, it's now, well, let's attack his character as far as his qualifications as a student. Well, we heard that he wasn't that great of a student
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I mean, we just have to look at what is actually transpiring. Nothing today as far as racism and prejudice in this country has changed, no more today than it did 60 years ago. The only difference is that today it's more lethal, because those very white men, like a Donald Trump, now, this is a white man that they've taken. They've plastered him all over the television with his own, you know, reality shows and all this other stuff. He's built these tall buildings and high rises, even here in Chicago, and he's plastered as being a guru of success
a white man with a comb over, not very attractive, not attractive at all. If it was his money and all of his wealth was taken away, he wouldn't even be able to keep the company of a dead dog. But yet and still, because of his power and his status and his money, that's what white men thrive on. If you remove that and put him neck to neck with a black man, that is his greatest fear, because they know if you take a Barack Obama and put him neck to neck with a Donald Trump, there is no comparison, there is no competition. Barack wins hand down. So the only way to keep the black man down is to, first of all, take his leader, which has been put on a pedestal, which now they acknowledge, look at Barack Obama as being, you know, on the pedestal, the black people's great, you know, guru, whatever they want to call him, and let's discredit him. Let's pull him apart bit by bit. Let's, first of all, let's tear away at his integrity. Let's tarnish his character. Let's do this. Let's break him down one step at a time in front of the nation of black people all around in this country and actually all around the world, and let's make the black man really look like what we've tried to create him to be from the day that we brought him over, a good-for-nothing snake in the grass, got to cut corners in order to accomplish things because he can't do it the legitimate way, and then we're going to bring this insecure white man in and build up our white society again so that we don't have to fall under the authority of any Negro or nigger, if you want to go there, and let's put them back in their place.
Hold on, guys, one second. I'd like to say that if you just joined us, you are listening to Secure Your Life. The phone lines are lighting up. I'd like to add some more people to the conversation. If you just joined us, the phone number is 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. We have people in the chat room who wants to get in on the conversation. Please put your comment and or question, and I will read them over the air. We do have a few minutes. I'm going to extend the show because this is going really great. Ron, I'm going to let you comment. Make it brief because I want to get in another phone call that has been waiting. Go ahead, Ronald.
Now, here's the thing. What has happened is that mention was made of the Constitution. Now, I don't know when it was amended, but when I was in high school, we had to learn the Constitution, memorize it, I should say, and say part of it was who could and who could not be president. What were the qualifications for president and who could not be president? One of the things that was stated was that a black man could not be president, a woman could not be president, an Indian could not be president, a Mexican, no president, a handicapped person could not be president. Now, I have mentioned this to people, and no one seems to be aware of this.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
And like I was saying, they used to teach that in school, so apparently it was on the book. So somewhere along the line, it was amended.
Okay.
Well, I would think that with the Emancipation Proclamation, that once black men were made free, because you have to look at when the Constitution was written, that then, of all men being created equal and being treated equally, I would think that the Constitution would have had to been amended, considering that then blacks had the right to run and be free to do the same things as whites were.
Well, they've made a number of amendments have been made to the Constitution.
They had to make the amendments to reflect the new society. See, the Constitution was never written for blacks or any other group other than white people, and
white
the Constitution
men.
Was actually, the original Constitution was actually written for white people to address
by
England.
By white people, and only for their men, because the women were not included in that. But I'm going to add area code 803. You have been very patient, and I know I would like to get you in on the conversation. Hello?
Hey, this is Thomas calling from Charlotte.
Hey, Thomas. What is your question and or comment?
Yeah, I was listening in, and I don't know who that was speaking. She gave a very codified response. Almost thought it was Francis Cress Wilson speaking herself, or Dr. Well, I should say Mr. Neely Fuller. But, so, I mean, I think she hit it right on the head. I think we have to just kind of be honest about what we have here. You know, this experiment called America basically has been an abject failure. And the reason I say that is because when you look at a society, okay, and you have racial homogeneity, you look at Japan, you look at Switzerland, you look at all these countries, they have no problem with providing a social safety net. But because we're here, they don't provide those social safety nets because they feel like it would be undeserved. So there's certain code words that they use. You know, they use a lot of code, you know, because when they hear about, you know, redistribution of wealth, what that says is undeserving black person getting my money. So we just have to be pretty honest about what we have here. And, you know, at one point, you know, the Constitution was reserved for white male landowners. So that was always the case. It was always about white male landowners. If you weren't a white male landowner, you weren't even really a citizen. So that was the bottom line to that. So, you know, what I would say is, you know, right now, and this is, and the funny thing about it is a lot of things that you think don't happen are still happening. As of 2009 and 2010, there were federally chartered banks that were fined for redlining, discrimination on loan applications, modifications. They're finding that, you know, if you are of color, you're being discriminated against for modifications. So when you answer those application questions about your, you know, ethnicity or race, you know, if you just say, you say, I don't want to answer the question, and they go ahead and, you know, they answer the question for you, which they shouldn't, you know, that's how they're making a determination in some cases who gets to stay in a home and who doesn't.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so people just need to just be very honest. I mean, I think sometimes it's almost like, I think one of our issues is just like, you know, someone who's gone through a trauma as a child, we don't want to acknowledge it.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like, you know, a little girl who's been touched, and she doesn't want to acknowledge the fact that she's been violated.
Yeah, and you're right. We as a people have been violated by everyone, and even our businesses and the businesses that we're trying to start, having to try to get funding and is a problem.
I call it institutionalized redlining. I mean, it's on every level. I mean, from the physical to the Social Security number, you just name it. I mean, just on so many different levels that we're being identified and forced into a certain category. I mean, you get some bright lights here and there. I mean, you give a few out so that people can look at each other and say, well, if he did it, I can do it. But the truth of the matter is, it was designed for one to do it and millions not to be able to do it.
Can I introduce something, this, you know, something
yes,
for
please.
The record?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is the absurdity of the financial system that we live in. I want you to, and this is what we have to be really, really sensitive to, okay? Because in this economic downturn, which is not a cycle of happenstance, this is planned, okay?
Exactly.
Now, I don't know if anyone remembers, but back when Reagan was president, okay, this is really, the class warfare started probably, actually you can go back to Nixon, because Nixon was the person who basically stopped universal health care from happening. He got with the people in California with Kaiser Permanente, and he basically, you know, made sure that private enterprise got into the health care system. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that unemployment, right, full employment was considered to be 2% unemployment. Now, mind you, population trends and all those different things, you know, changed, but, you know, that should have been offset by the fact that there's more demand as there's more population, provided that you have an educated workforce that gets a living wage. Now, in the 80s, there was a guy named Laffer, okay, who worked for Reagan, was an economist. He came up with this theory called the Laffer curve. Now, this is the most preposterous thing. they tried to substantiate it with the Kennedy administration did by lowering taxes. Okay, so said that if you lower income tax, you'll get more revenue. Now, mind you, the whole concept is that if you lower the marginal tax rates on the very wealthy, you would get more revenue because they'd start more businesses, and therefore it would trickle down. Economics. Now, since then, unemployment got up to 5%, and that was considered to be normal. So now, with that being the case, because they couldn't meet the goals of 2% unemployment, they took it up to 5%. Now, for years to come, we'll never see 5% unemployment again. We'll be at probably 10% unemployment. You know, but mind you, unemployment is measured by people who are actually looking for work. They don't count the people who stop looking for work, and all the whole segment of people, they don't even count in those numbers. We really got an unemployment rate that's close to the depression numbers, but they don't want to say that.
Yeah, that's right.
We're really in a hyper depression. So what my point is that we have got to stop. You know, if you see a young man or a young woman who's trying to find employment and they can't find employment, please stop making it seem like they're lazy.
Thank you.
If anyone's heard of John Henry, you know why John Henry, what happened with John Henry? He his heart combusted from driving rail spikes.
Right.
And it's called John Henryism. That's what we have. We have to work two times harder in order to accomplish the same thing. And so it's illogical. It's all illogical. How is it that you're going to have this many people, in a country the size, an economy the size, and have the expectation that someone's going to be able to get gainful employment when the numbers just don't support it? 80% of our economy is a service economy. Now, I know some people might be listening and saying, oh, he's painting doom and gloom. I'm painting realities and numbers and facts. Men lie when they lie, but numbers don't. So we just have to be very honest about that. We have to be willing to do things differently and think differently, whether that means outside this country.
Thank you.
And because what happens if this dollar goes bye-bye, your bread will be $10 and your gas will be $20.
That's right.
And that's true. It'll be the same conditions that Russia was experiencing and still is experiencing to a certain extent.
F.A. Diamond?
Yes.
Yeah. Say something else, like Thomas was saying about the game is going on. Okay, now I worked for the Chicago Transit Authority for 33 years. And for a long time I was not, okay, now I got in shortly after they really started hiring blacks in, say, like really in great numbers. And the only reason they started hiring blacks in great numbers was because the city was changing. The white people were leaving the city and moving out to the suburbs because of integration. They did not want their kids to go to school with the black kids, so they moved out to the suburbs. So as a result, the neighborhoods start changing from white to black. So now these white bus drivers are going through black neighborhoods, and they didn't like that, so they were quitting. So Chicago Transit Authority started grabbing blacks to drive the buses. But much to my surprise, most of the black bus drivers were from very small places in the South. They had very few city people. I should say urban people. And these people, they're like really just country bumpkin people. From Chitlin Switch, Mississippi, jump off Georgia, and never heard of Tennessee. Lickfield, Alabama. I mean, like, places
you said Chitlin Switch, Mississippi, or whatever.
This is no joke. Places you never even heard of, and none of these people were like urban people. And something else, so to show you how the game is being played, what they do. The black boys are dropping out of school like crazy. Black girls having babies like crazy. but they're getting their rear ends back in school. The only place you see a lot of black boys in a graduation class is grammar school. The black girls are going on to college.
Done by design.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all part of the game. And I've said this before. You have more black women today, more black men today living with black men. You have more black men living with black women today than you have black men living with black women. You have the women are homeowners. You don't see that many single. If you can go down to the assess the county building where they keep those records, you won't
90%.
Find that many on the records. You won't find that many single men that are homeowners. You'll find scads and scads of Mary Smith, Susie Carruthers, on there as a homeowner by herself.
Yeah, 90% or higher.
Right. You don't see it. And the only way, most of the you don't see any, very rarely you see a single man up there. There's just John Jones, homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he's some really old guy and his wife has passed away, and so he's got his name down there by himself now. But if it's a younger person, forget it. And the thing being, it's set up so the girls, despite the fact they can have 20 kids, the government will set up for them.
That's true.
It's
but hold
been
on,
like
Ross.
That since
someone else wants to respond to what you were saying. Go ahead, Tanya.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, you know, everything that the gentlemen have stated is very true and it's very valid. But I think one of the things that we have to do, and this is a great opportunity to actually do that, is that we know what the issues are. We know what the problems are. But we need to start coming together to try and find some solutions. And I think that one of the first places that we need to start is that we have to start by reconditioning and re-educating our people. We have to get to a point where these things that we're stating, which are very valid, they're the obvious, but we need to now make that transformation of changing the way that we think. And we have to implement that now in our children because most of us, I don't know about you guys, but I'm in my mid-40s. And for most of us, if we've gotten to this point and we're still kind of jacked up as far as where we're going and what we need to do in order to make some road changes and make some right turns, it's kind of a little bit too late. But it's not too late to educate and change the kids, our young people, that 35 and younger generation, to the point where they now have to start taking responsibilities for themselves and for their families because the government's not going to do it. They'll set you up to put you on the road of destruction and failure to the point where you get to where you can't, you've so far dug down that you can't reach up for anybody to even try to pull you back up, that we need to now teach them that, you know what, you've got to run this game and you've got to run this program for yourself. You are your own commodity. You're your own business. So you have to operate from the time, like with my daughters, sixth grade. They have to, from sixth grade, they now have to start planning and working hard academically in preparation for getting into a good college. And that's a fact. And there's information that's out here that we as parents and as adults have to start channeling into our children because we have to change their mindsets. We can't keep going in the direction that we're going. It may be too late for us. For some of us who just don't get it or didn't have that opportunity because they didn't have the love or they had parents who were too busy just trying to keep food on the table and we can't hold them responsible because most of them probably was working from a broken home. But we have to take responsibility now as a people to move forward and we've got to put together some programs and plans in order to help our people because we can't keep talking about it. We've been talking too long.
Well, there's one thing we have to be honest about. Then some people don't like to hear this, but there's going to be people who are going to be left behind. There's going to be a lot of them.
Plenty.
Always.
I went home to New York last year for the first time in 4 years, and the reason I don't go off either my parents or there is because it's so depressing. It's just so.
Mm-hmm.
just absolutely spiritually draining. That, you know, when you go and you see your area's been decimated by drugs, by high crime, by high dropout rates, it is nothing but just take all your desire. And so, you know, upon going home, you know, I did something else. I actually trained. I did things I didn't do in probably about 15, 20 years, you know, just trying to get acclimated to, you know, what city life was like again, and having to go through the rigors of city living, you know, public transportation and just everything that you have to go through. I mean, and it was sad to see it, but, you know, there's people that lived in, say, for instance, old tenement buildings that, you know, they were happy, you know, living in a tenement building. You know, they were happy with the little bit of comforts that they had. You know, they had a big screen TV and an Xbox, and that was about it. And wanted to get a 70-inch screen TV, okay, for what?
Until they cut those televisions off, they're never going to be able to be retrainable anyway. I mean, they're being taught, children are being taught more by television than they are by family values and home, and their parents are being taught by television. So until we actually get into a different mindset, like Thomas said, I'm a little bit more pessimistic than you. I believe that maybe a very high percentage of people, the world is already set up to be reset. So many people won't survive. Many groups, many different people won't survive because the learners will inherit the world. They'll inherit everything. The people are not learning. And then another thing, education is so expensive, and it's getting more expensive. Even public education is getting extremely expensive. If you don't have money, you're not going to be able to get educated in the future, period. So, you know, I mean, the University of California used to have State University of California used to have a $600 tuition maybe 10 years ago. Now it's $12,000, and we're talking public education. We don't want to talk about private education, how expensive that's going to be. So, I mean, there's the middle class is totally disappearing. The void between the gap between the haves and the have-nots is getting so wide that, like I said, many people won't survive it. They'll be, the caste system is in place. The haves and the have-nots are basically here. Unless you can do something fantastic, and going the old route of getting a good education and going to find a job and all that is just about thrown out the window.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? One of the things.
Create businesses.
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead,
Tanya. I'm going to tell you guys. One of the things that my father taught me, which is the greatest advice I ever received from anyone, and my father never got past an eighth grade education, but he was a businessman. He was a great mechanic. But he told me, he paid for my education, and he said, when I went to college and I graduated, and he told me, you're going out there, you're going to go into corporate America because that's what your allies are doing. That's what your friends are doing. That's what your associates and the people that you meet in life are going to do. But by no means, don't make corporate America your ends for all. Look at corporate America as paid experience to open and get your own business started. That was the greatest information that anyone had ever given me. Now, you're absolutely right. There are tons of us who are going to get left behind. But you know what? They have to get left behind because some we can't pull them up. But we have to still focus on what we can do. And what we can do is prepare those who are capable and willing and those that we have the ability to mold and prepare them to be able to do substantial work in their endeavors. And then they can reach back and help some of those or help the condition of some of those that were left behind or those that came in behind them. We can't fix the world. We can't change everything and turn it around. That's a given. We cannot. And we can't even focus or try to think that we can. But what we can do is try to change what we can change right now so that we can make tomorrow a better time for our children if we're still around, and even the generations in between, and those
That's what we have
I was
to focus. But like the young man said, like Thomas said, first and foremost, we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to look at the realities of life, learn from them, do what we can to change what we can, and move forward, and we can't keep looking back. Because if we keep looking back, we can never stay focused on where we're moving ahead of.
Well, the only thing I can say about looking back is like looking down at your feet. I mean, sometimes you have to look down to make sure you don't step into the same hole that you know is down there in the street. The point I'm trying to make is...
Well, but there's a difference between looking down to see where you're going, that you don't step in any crap, than looking back.
I don't think anything is wrong with looking back, because every year people look back. They have new birthdays. What I'm trying to say is we have to understand our past. I don't say that, you know, because looking back is just as important as looking ahead to me, because it's all a part of your journey in life. So you can't exclude a part of your journey for another part. I mean, it's all your one experience. I mean, looking back is okay, but to me, the thing is that we have to really kind of pull the veils down and see what's really happening to us. What is really going on behind the scenes? There's something bigger and greater going on than the average person can see. So I think change starts right in your own mind when you start questioning what's going on for real, and you really look at what's happening for real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing I'm saying. Anyway.
I'll tell you something. I do believe is going to happen. Like you were saying about a lot of people are going to get left behind.
Mm-hmm.
You take like these people that are strung out on drugs.
Right.
I'm not saying that drug rehab cannot work, but as it presently stands, drug rehab does not work. It's a revolving door.
It's been a revolving door since the 1800s,
right?
1700s. People don't understand that Montgomery Wards and all those people used to be the biggest drug dealers around. They'd send you drugs in the mail.
Now here's the thing. I'm sorry, from the Chicago Transit Authority. Hey, they were bringing. Okay, they bought us out. So a lot of people left at the same time. So Chicago Transit Authority was hiring in bulk. So now you have mandatory drug testing. Now they test you for drugs before you can get the job. Now this is in 1998. But every 100 people that they were testing, they were finding 12 and 13 that were clean.
Right.
Every 100 people get tested, 12 and 13 are clean.
And it's not just a black problem.
Oh, no.
Well,
everybody was going down there.
That's a universal problem.
Yeah, no, actually, 80% of all drugs are used by non-black groups. It's just a mindset that we're in, that we're the number one in everything. We're the worst of everything.
Here's an interesting number. So, blacks make up 15% of the crack users. We serve 85% of the jail time. Whites make up 65% of the crack users. But they only serve 5% of the jail time. So basically, there's a double standard within the system.
Thank you.
If you're black and you're poor, you're going to go to jail. Versus if you're doing cocaine, you'll get rehab. Now, the recidivism rates are so high because what happens when someone gets out of jail and there's no economic opportunity? They go back to the same thing that led them there.
So
the cycle and the revolving door. It's not because rehab doesn't work. It's because you put them back in the same environment without hope for opportunity, and they're a third-class citizen because now they have a felony.
Yep. Done by design.
Okay, guys. This has been great. I would like us to have some last-minute comments before we wrap up. I'm going to go by the phone number, so I'll give you a chance to have your last-minute comments. So I'm going to start from the bottom up, 773-988. Any last comments or questions?
My last comment is to get away from the television set and start using your mind. Don't let people tell you how to think. Question things and go beyond the obvious. Thank you.
Okay. And area code 803, last comment?
Yeah, I think just in general, we have to understand what this world really is about. I had it all wrong. When I was young, I thought the world revolved around money, and it's not about money. It's about resources. Because money is basically worthless. It's about resources. You know, something funny that, you know, a comedian said, Eddie Griffin, he said, you know, they came over to Africa, and we had all the land and the riches, and they had the Bibles. Now we got all the Bibles, and they got the land and the riches.
Thank you.
Old thing about that. And I'm going to drop another jewel for you. A very, very brilliant man that you probably have never heard of came up with a formula. Time plus money equals euphoria.
Repeat that one more time.
I can deal with it.
Time plus money equals euphoria. That's a formula that he totally came up with on his own. He's someone actually, Diamond, that you definitely, I think I sent you an email, Brian Franklin.
Send that to me again so that I can put it on the show page as well as tweet and Facebook and everything else, because that is something that we all need to really take a closer look at. And then the next person to give me last minute comments would be 773-787. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I would like to just say that it would be really great if the next communication in this group, in this forum, that we could start trying to figure out a procedure and a process, as small as it may be, of bringing change. Change to our current situations and a process of starting it out.
Okay, I agree with that too. And 815, last comments, please.
Okay. Now, I am definitely anti-drug. I hope it never comes to this, but when China turned communist, they had a terrible drug problem, but they solved it to a great extent. What happened is that they went around to every city, every little village, hamlet, and whatever, and they told the people, say, hey, we're going to come back here. Here's a plan to get you off the drugs. We're going to come back here in X amount of time, and if you're still using, we're going to kill you. You know, they killed them. They stacked them up. They stacked the bodies up like false ties, but they cleaned it up.
Okay, so we're talking resolve.
I hope it never comes to that here, but they solved it.
Okay, well, here are my closing comments for our show. We had a wonderful display of difference of opinion, and all of us agree that there definitely needs to be a resolve for our socioeconomic situation as African Americans, as Americans as a whole. We have seen some great accomplishments that have happened to this country and to our people as a whole, as well as reflecting back to how our beginnings started on this block that we call America and how we are viewed on the planet as a whole, and how we need to, one, look at our communities, start with working on some resolve for our young people. And as you all have all said, some will be lost in the process, but we can't get stuck on what has happened in the past. We must reflect back so that we know where we've been, where we are, so that we can know where we're going in our future. And I am so happy that we had such a great conversation, at least getting the things that out and unveiling the truth about what's going on in our country, what is happening to us as a people, what has happened to our own community businesses, and what we need to do as a community so that we can encourage people who want to start their business, who can't find a job, actually look at possibly taking their skill sets and starting those businesses, and how the next generation can do better than we have currently done, because used to be where every generation would do better than the ones previous. I believe that we are now have gone in such retrograde that we need to start changing things for the positive. So I want to end our show with that and encourage all of you all to come back. Let's keep these conversations going and let's start some resolve. So you have listened to Secure Your Life. This is Business in the Making. I am encouraging you all to join us tomorrow, where we're going to talk about the kids, which is a perfect time to continue this conversation about how to bring our children into the fold to make changes for them. You can always join us every week, weeknight at 10 o'clock, where we're Secure Your Life. We always have great topics. And please do come back, tell a friend, bring a friend. Come to the chat room, email the email address for Secure Your Life. It's SYLSHOW@att.net. We would love to hear from you. Please do call in, email us. And until next time, I'm going to say goodnight to you all. And goodnight. And thanks so much for joining me. You were listening to Secure Your Life. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Diamond.
Good night.
I'm thinking back.